Welcome back to the ISSA podcast, Trainers Talking Truths. This episode dives into the less fun and frilly parts of fitness. John and I chat with Ricardo Johnson II, who has an extensive background in fitness and training, but he now works in the field of health insurance. And when we say health insurance, we're talking about medical, dental, vision, and emergency care coverage for both the fitness professional and their families. Some employers in gyms and fitness offer health insurance plans. Some will even contribute to the cost for employees. But many jobs in fitness don't have this option, especially if you're working for yourself and you're the boss and have to provide this coverage for yourself. In our conversation, we'll talk about some of the really impactful ways that health insurance benefits you and your family and explore the partnership ISSA has created with Allstate to offer our fitness professionals affordable, flexible, and custom healthcare plans to protect you, your business, and your pocketbook. Happy listening. Welcome to Trainers Talking Truths. This is an ISSA podcast dedicated to exploring the fitness industry and uncovering the whys and hows of personal training. To do that, we'll talk directly to the industry experts and certified trainers. We'll dig into fitness programming, business tactics, nutrition, and more. You'll even hear from current training clients who offer insight from the other side. We've got the fitness industry covered, so turn up the volume and enjoy the drive. Hello, world, and welcome back for another ISSA podcast, Trainers Talking Truths. It's your co-host, Jenny Liebel, here with my co-host, Mr. John Bauer. How are you, John?
I'm great, and thank you for the introduction. And speaking of introductions, today on Trainers Talking Truths, we're doing something a little different and something brand new. We are introducing the Muscle Mailbag. So what's the Muscle Mailbag? It's listener-submitted questions that we are going to go one by one and answer here on the podcast. And here's some of the cool things about it is we get to answer questions that you guys want answered. So that's one part. But then the second part is all of the people that we picked are winners. Now, you're all winners in our minds if you're listening right now. So please do keep that in mind. But everyone that we picked to be a part of the Muscle Mailbag are winners in that we are going to be highlighting them on the show. But then we're also going to be sending out a discount code to them for a future ISSA purchase. So congratulations to the winners already. But again, this is the Muscle Mailbag. We're doing something a little different, answering listener submitted questions. Jenny, I hope you're excited for this.
Oh, I can tell you're excited. This is going to be awesome. And I listen to a ton of industry podcasts, and they all do these like ask me anything kind of things where we just take questions from our listeners and we want to answer the things that you guys want to know about. So I'm super excited. We've got some really good questions that we chose, really great ones that were sent in. By the way, we're going to do this again. So keep looking, keep your eyes out for the link that we'll send out on our social media, on our Facebook pages to get those questions from you guys, because this is going to happen again. Don't you worry.
Yeah. And I just want to make sure that I mentioned something. A part of the reason why we do this, sure, it's fun, but we want to make sure that we're talking about things that are relevant to you all. Jenny and I can get into the weeds talking about the science of exercise science and nutrition science. And some of it's great, some of it's fascinating, but it's not always all super relevant to the day-to-day of being a fitness professional. So by getting questions from you all and having the chance to talk about them here on the podcast allows us the opportunity to speak to things that are relevant to you out there in the field doing the job of personal training. All right, Jenny, are you ready for our first question?
I am. What you got, John?
Okay. First question is from Carrie Reynolds from Wisconsin.
Woo! So, yay, Carrie!
Carrie, you're a winner. So here's the question. Do we have any routines for golfers? Carrie's interested in teaching and training golfers to be in their best shape and to help their swing. She's had a lot of questions about this, mostly from older adults and senior golfers. Jenny, what do you think?
So I love this question, and it can kind of be extrapolated to literally any sport or activity. My first thought with this is, what are the functional demands of that sport, right? Golf, right? It's a lot of shoulder. It's a lot of rotation through your core, right? Through your hips, through your knees, although your knees aren't meant to rotate. So that's important to understand. All the way down to your ankle, right? Depending on what handedness you have, you're rotating all the way down through your feet. There's a lot of core strength. There's some glute and hip strength required, right? What are the functional demands of the sport? And then, of course, you have to be able to walk, generally speaking, a lot of walking in golf. So if we were taking all of the information that we knew about personal training and putting together an exercise program, we can focus in on those functional demands of this sport and put them together, right? If we're talking about the training aspect, we're not talking about training the golf swing, for example, or playing golf. That's a skilled coach's job. But as far as training the fitness elements of golf, we can train the individual elements of that sport. That's how I would go about it to start.
Jenny, so you made a couple of really good points there. When we are training golfers, we're not teaching them how to play golf. We're helping their body to be able to withstand the forces of playing golf and that golf swing, because it's a pretty dynamic movement. But then we're also trying to train them in a way where they can improve their movement. The king of swing is mobility. And I used to train quite a few golfers, and I went through a program with the Titleist Performance Institute. So if you're a golfer, you've heard the brand Titleist. I was training a lot of golfers, a couple of professional golfers in there. And that's something that I learned is that, again, the king of swing is going to be that mobility, that rotational mobility. And that's going to be through the core, through the hips. And like Jenny said earlier, the knees are not really meant to rotate. But if your core and hips are not rotating, then your knees are going to be taking on quite a bit of that rotational force. So you want to make sure to be able to properly assess the needs of a golfer, because they are specific, right? The needs of a golfer are not the same as the needs of a basketball player, for instance. And then when you start to assess their movement patterns and even their postures, you have to assess not just from a static postural position like a normal standing position, but you want to see what their posture is like when they're in their golf swing position, because that matters, right? That's the position they're going to be in when they're swinging the golf club. And when we do those things, we're able to kind of assess their ability to rotate through the spine, rotate through the hips. And if we can see that they're lacking in any of these areas, that's where we can create a program. When we need more rotation, let's just assume a right-handed golfer, you know, they're going to need a good amount of rotational development through that left hip. They'll definitely need it through that right hip as well, but that left hip is going to be taking on quite a bit of force. So we want to make sure that it's ready for it. And then speaking toward, you know, some of the questions you're getting and a lot of senior golfers, I would say all of this is even more so. You want to make sure that you're doing these things so that they can keep playing. They may not be playing competitively, but they want to be able to play a lot for fun, right? If we're talking about retired people and golf is one of their pastimes, I used to train a lot of golfers, and I happened to live near a senior living area where they had multiple golf courses. So they were playing a lot of golf. So their goal was to be able to golf a lot and not experience all the aches and pains of swinging that golf club every day of the week. So again, back to the original question of, do we have routines for golfers? A lot of this goes back to a lot of the basic principles of being a trainer in the first place. We first establish what is the goal. And then after that, we start to assess what some of their needs are by assessing their ability to move. If we have an understanding of what some of the normal faults in a golf swing would be, that's a big step toward us understanding some of the physical needs of our golfers. And here's what I mean by that. If someone, you know, has a tendency to slice the ball quite a bit. That's a real technical term. If you're not a golfer, if they have a tendency to slice, it might be their golf swing, and they might need help from their coach, but there might actually be some physical things that are causing them to swing in that way. So that's where we can really come into play, is help them to be able to just move better and move more freely. And let me tell you, as someone who trained a bunch of golfers, if you can get them to move more freely, their body feels better, and they're hitting the ball like 20 or 30 yards longer, they will keep coming back for more.
Yep, absolutely. And I think one point that you made that I wanted to reiterate too, John, is that not only are we training the functional elements of golf, right, as a sport, and the swing and the positions, all that good stuff, but also where are some of the more common injuries that occur in golf? It's the shoulder, it's the elbow, it's the knee, sometimes it's the hip, right? We'd want to make sure that those joints are, again, mobile and strong as appropriate, to make sure that we're avoiding injuries, because when those joints are bothering someone, it not only impacts their swing, it can put a little hitch in their swing, but they might not be able to go out and golf at all. And again, that's not the point, right? The whole point is that they can get out there and keep playing. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully that helps, Carrie, a little bit of insight, but there's no one answer for this. Just like there's no one answer for anyone's programming in exercise, it's does this make sense for the person? So does it make sense for this golfer? And after you do your assessments and understand what their weaknesses might be and where you can have some areas of opportunity, then if it makes sense for them, it makes sense.
All right. Thanks again, Carrie Reynolds from Wisconsin. Moving on to our next question. Our next question is coming from Jackie Halbert Waskell from Winnipeg, Canada.
Yay, so welcome, Jackie.
Yes. And again, we've got another winner, Jackie Halbert Waskell from Winnipeg, Canada. So this one's a fun one because it starts with, I'm stumped with my hubby. And, you know, I think already it's getting interesting. And there was a lot of details in this question, but long story short, Jackie is having some difficulty with getting her husband to take on some of the things that she's passionate about in terms of taking care of her health and her fitness. So whether that be making some changes to nutrition or potentially starting to add exercise into the lifestyle, she's having a lot of difficulty with this. And, you know, this is something that I can relate to, and I bet a lot of us can relate to. But again, the moral of the story with this question is Jackie stumped with the hubby, having some difficulty getting him involved in better health and wellness and fitness behaviors. So Jenny, is this something that you've had experience with and something you can relate to?
Yeah. So I really like this question, Jackie, because there's a lot of people out there who want to work with their friends, their families, their significant others, their neighbors, right? People that you know really, really well. And as someone who my husband and I, like, I'm a bodybuilder. Everybody's first question is, oh, does your husband compete? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He wants to work out and on his own. Like, working out together for us doesn't work well. Because it's hard for us, right? As a trainer, I have to put my trainer hat on when I'm working with any client, whether I know you or not, whether I'm related to you or not. But then at some point, I have to take that hat off and be your friend or be your wife or be something else to you. And sometimes those hats get mixed up. So it is difficult. It's not impossible, but it is difficult working with a significant other. And the first thing that came to mind when I read your question, Jackie, was, have you asked him what he needs from you? Or did you just come in guns a-blazing and saying, here's what we need to change based on, like, I know everything about you, right? Here's what you need to do differently. Here's what you need to change. Here's what you need to change. But at any point, have you asked him, what do you need from me, right? What would you like help with? That would be a great question to start. And then also keep in mind, we can't make anyone do anything. The only person you are in control of is you, right? So even though it's your significant other and you know everything about them, you live together, you're with them all the time, right? You cannot make them do anything. So even though you know, he might even know that it's right for him. I need to do this. I should be doing that. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. So that's where I want to start the conversation is, have you asked him what he needs from you? Okay. And just remember, you cannot make anyone do anything. It has to come from him. And that's where I'm at with my husband. We go to the gym together and then we walk in the door. We give each other a kiss and we're like, bye, see you in a half hour or see you in an hour. Right. We don't work out together. Like, if you need me, you know where I'm at. You can see me, come find me. But otherwise, peace. Okay. What would you say for this one, John?
Well, I would say that in my history of being a fitness professional, that I've been highly unsuccessful at training significant others or even family members. And part of the reason is just the relationship that we have. They don't necessarily view me as Mr. Fitness Professional. I'm just drawn to them. And whether it's brother or son or significant other, that relationship, for whatever reason, made it difficult for me to be able to train someone. Because when you're training someone, you're kind of playing the role of their leader and their coach. And sometimes it's difficult to assume that role. So because of that, Jackie, you may have to ask yourself, am I the right person to be trying to train your husband in the first place? And that's actually nothing against you. Different people will respond well to different sorts of trainers. And if he wants some help and he wants to make improvements to his health and fitness, he just may need someone else that can kind of be that person that can act as a coach and guide him in a way that he respects and really responds to and will respond to in a much different way than he's responding to his wife. Because, you know, for better or for worse, Your relationship is what it is. And sometimes trying to assume the role of being fitness professional for someone that you're so close to can be very difficult. And like I said, I've been very unsuccessful in doing that in my own life. And this brings us kind of to a bigger topic, but in the world of personal training, not every client is going to be for you. Sometimes they're going to need someone a little bit different. I remember when I was a young trainer in my early 20s, I could tell that some of the more middle-aged or older adults, they weren't responding to me as well because they looked at me as such a young person. So despite the fact that I might have had a lot of training and a degree and a lot of information, they didn't relate to me very well. And because of that, they didn't respond as well to my coaching as they might have if they got the older version of me. So just know that this is a relationship job. And sometimes it's the right relationship and sometimes it's not the right relationship.
Yeah, I agree with that, John. And I think most trainers have encountered something like that where it just didn't click, right? It's not that you didn't like each other. It's not that, you know, I can't help this person, but maybe I'm not the best person to help this person. So in that case, refer them to somebody else. I do that all the time. I'm like, hey, here, I know somebody that might be a little bit better fit for you or that could work with you a little bit differently. Here they are. Guess what? If a good coach will let people go, right? It's not about, oh my gosh, I'm never going to find another client to replace this person, right? He's still going to be your husband. You're still going to see him all the time, right? But maybe he's just working with somebody else and then you can support him in that guidance that he's getting from someone else. But if it ends up, he goes to somebody else, he's like, you know what? Actually, I realize that I think I like what you're doing better. He can always come back. Okay. And then you can be like, okay, yeah, let me just lock in and we can do this. Right. And maybe he'll start to respond a little differently after seeing somebody else and realizing that maybe that's not the route that he wanted to go, or maybe it is. Does that make sense? And I really like the end of your question here, Jackie. You said, what do you do when your loved ones just won't change? And this takes me back to my first point, that we can lead that horse to water, but we cannot make it drink. We cannot make anyone do anything, right? Life is a series of choices. Even if someone had a gun to your head, a knife to your throat, I know that's dramatic. They could tell you, you need to do something. You still have a choice. What happens after you make that choice is like another story, but you always have a choice, right? So we can't make people do anything. And it's not that he doesn't want to change or that he won't change. It's just like John said, maybe he needs that guidance from someone else and not his wife, because he sees you as wife, not this is my trainer or a coach that I need to listen to. The last thing you want it to do too is cause like animosity in your own home where now you guys resent each other. Because you think that he's judging or he thinks that you're judging him all the time and everything I eat, you have something to say about it, blah, 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 right? Ugh, that sounds terrible. Don't do that to yourself, right? So if that's what's happening, I would say remove yourself from that situation and get him to somebody else.
And I think that's great advice, Jenny. And hopefully you guys are seeing that just between these first two questions, two very different questions, but very relevant to being out there in the world of being a trainer, getting questions about trying to enjoy a round of golf, or questions about how do you relate your fitness to friends and family members. Very relevant stuff and both things that Jenny and I have both encountered. So thank you for that. All right, moving on to question number three. We've got Madison Mazio from Arizona coming to us with a question. So thank you, Madison. And her question, what's the best way to keep up fitness progress while traveling?
I love this question, John, because I feel like everybody travels at some point, right? We're not talking about getting on a plane and going halfway around the world, but we all travel at some point. So I think there's a few questions. So if you notice, guys, we don't usually have just a straight up answer. We usually have additional questions. And I feel like that's the way it should be. If you have a straight answer for every question somebody asks you, you might not be doing this correctly. So we have other questions, right? And John and I kind of talked about this beforehand. There's different types of trips. Right? Let's start there. So hear me out. There's trips where you go to relax, right? You're going to the beach with your family, or you're going, you know, to the mountains and you just want to go sit in the hot tub and just relax and hang out and not do anything. And maybe that includes not exercising deliberately, or maybe it does, right? There's sightseeing trips where maybe you have things planned, where you're going to go to Europe and you have all these places that you want to go to and these museums that you're going to go to, and you're going to be walking every day and sightseeing. That's activity as well. We can't forget about that, right? And it's generally speaking, probably going to be more activity than you're doing on a daily basis. Like think of a trip to like a theme park if you've been to one like Disneyland or Disney World or something, oh my gosh, how many people go back to their hotel room, John, at the end of the day and are like, oh, I just walked 15 freaking miles. I never do that. My legs hurt so bad. And they wake up the next day and they're blasted. They're so tired. They're fatigued, right? That's my point. And then there's also trips where people deliberately travel for fitness, like retreats. They go on a yoga retreat or a retreat where they're going hiking with their friends. John's on his way this summer. He's going traveling to Europe for gosh darn 2 weeks. And they're going to a bunch of soccer matches and sightseeing, right? So there's different types of trips. What is the purpose of your trip? So if your trip, business trips, another one, right? Or you know that you're going to have other things to do and you may or may not have time to actively exercise. So figure out what type of trip is this. Make sure you pack appropriately would be my next piece of advice. So if you plan on exercising, make sure you pack the appropriate clothing, right? And remember, A, you can usually buy clothes in most places. So you don't, maybe you plan on buying a new t-shirt when you get there so you can work out in it or whatever. Also, you can wash clothes while you're traveling. You realize that, right? You don't need a laundromat or a washer dryer. You can wash stuff. I've done it before, John. You can wash stuff in the sink in your hotel room and hang it up over the tub and let it dry and wear it again tomorrow, right? So there's ways that you can get around not having to pack 10 pairs of workout clothes. Maybe you pack two and you just plan on reusing them. So plan ahead, pack appropriately. But also plan ahead as far as what type of exercise are you planning to get? I'm big on this, John. When I travel, especially if I'm staying in a hotel, which I am an indoor person, so it's usually in a hotel. I do not camp and hike like all of you guys do. I do not like bugs. I'm not a big outdoor person. But I always look to see what does the hotel offer. So I'll go to their website or go on hotels.com or wherever, find out, do they have a gym? And if I can find photos of that gym or call and ask, can you please tell me what type of equipment do you have in your little gym facility, please? Because some gyms, John, when I go to Vegas, one of my favorite places to go, we go like 5 or 6 times a year. Those hotels, stacked and jacked, huge, massive gyms with like everything you could possibly want. It looks like a Lifetime in a lot of these places. And then you go to, you know, I don't know, Napa or some random place like Utah. We've gone to go golf and the hotel has an bench, meaning one bench, maybe 3 dumbbells and a really broken elliptical, right? Okay. So would I rather use that equipment or am I going to work out in my room? Do you see what I'm getting at here? So what kind of trip is it? Pack accordingly, clothes-wise, and then plan what kind of exercise you want to do. And I'd also dare say, it's okay if you skip it. Like sometimes a little bit of a break is not a bad thing, especially if it's just a weekend. Calm down. You'll be fine. What would you say for this one, John?
Yeah, so a lot of great tips there. And you're right. If it's just a weekend, your progress is not going to be too impaired. But the question again was, what's the best way to keep up fitness progress while traveling? Well, it depends on the type of progress you are trying to maintain, by the way. So someone like you, Jenny, who is working toward some bodybuilding shows, you know, taking 3 or 4 weeks away from the weights is probably not great for you.
Yeah.
But for other people who are trying to just maintain a healthy weight, not gain weight while they're on vacation, you know, it might be built into your trip. Like you were saying, Jenny, you know, I'm going to be in Europe for a while this summer, and I guarantee that my average step count is going to be way higher than when I'm here at home. So my average step count, my average calorie burn is going to be way higher. So I'm not really concerned with weight gain. Now, one of the game changers for me, because I used to run into a lot of trouble of trying to get workouts in when I travel, is because I was imagining that the workouts had to be like they are when I'm at home, you know, when I go to my gym. And that's usually blocking off, you know, an hour of time. And that's an hour of vacation time that's getting eaten up. But there's nothing wrong with doing a 20-minute workout. There's nothing wrong with just knocking it out. And there's nothing wrong with doing simply body weight style training. And again, 20 minutes of body weight style training, you can definitely do some lower body, some upper body. You can use tools that aren't necessarily dumbbells and barbells, but you can use other tools as well. And that can be just enough to get you a good workout. For me, when I do that in the beginning of the day, it's a great start to my day and it makes sure that I get it in before I go off and do all my vacation stuff. But it's also a great way to just kind of keep up with what the question asked, keeping up with my fitness progress or maintaining myself by simply doing something. You know, when you're away on vacation, I don't think the goal is to continue to build tons of muscle and get way stronger while you're gone, right? The goal is to, you know, have a good vacation, have a good time and see some things and experience some nice relaxation or whatever you're doing. So I think you know, reevaluating what you think a good workout is going to be while you're gone is a good thing. And I know it was a game changer for me by just telling myself, hey, let me get 15 to 20 minutes in of something to kind of work all the different movement patterns. And then I know that I'm probably about to do 20, 25,000 steps doing my sightseeing throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully that's helpful for you guys. And I love that we're talking about this, John, because not only is it for you guys, the listeners, right? We all travel and we want to make sure that we're, you know, keep it up with ourselves, but also for your clients. Sometimes we have to talk people off the ledge because they think that all or nothing mentality, where if I don't get it in, then, oh my gosh, I might as well not be doing this at all. It's not that serious, right? Especially if it's just a couple of days. So helping them understand strategies for when they do travel, or one last one that I want to plug in there, it kind of goes with planning ahead. Most people plan their vacations, especially, or bigger trips well in advance, right? Every now and again, you might have a last minute trip or shoot, tomorrow I got to get on a plane. That's different. But we're talking about a pre-planned vacation. So what's stopping you from, okay, well, I have 4 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks before my vacation. Let me make sure I keep all my ducks in a row now so that when I'm gone, I'm not going to slide backwards, right? It's not going to be that big of a deal because I'm where I want to be or close to it. And I can afford this little bit of time off as a rest time. So this is something that we're going to absolutely have to work with our clients on and help them figure out strategies that make sense for them. If it makes sense for them, it makes sense.
And to add one thing to something Jenny said earlier about packing appropriately, meaning you better bring some workout clothes with you if you want to get these workouts in. There are different types of equipment that are very travel friendly. And I've been the guy that would bring bands with me. And I'm not just talking about like physical therapy bands. There are these bands called these Predator bands where they have significant resistance to them. And they are a useful tool for doing like your pulling movements and all kinds of great exercises. And that can enhance the at home or in the hotel room workout. So there are tools out there. So if you're the type of person, and I would imagine listeners of this podcast would be, if you're the type of person that would want to bring an exercise tool with you to help enhance your workouts, then bands or some sort of suspension trainer are easy to pack. They don't take up much room and they have a lot of versatility to them that allow you to do a little bit more of some of the workouts that you're used to.
Good point.
All right, moving on. So thanks again, Madison. Our next question is a familiar name to Jenny and myself, because we've seen this guy in a lot of our boot camps for a while now, maybe a few months now, Jenny. Our next question comes from Andrew Saxon.
Yay,
from Paris, Andrew. France. Yes. Welcome, Andrew. And yes, coming to us from Paris, France. And this is an interesting question that gives us a few things to talk about here. So he says, as the fitness industry evolves, there's a growing emphasis on intuitive fitness and coaching styles that prioritize individualized approaches tailored to clients' unique needs and preferences. So how do you envision integrating the principles of intuitive fitness into the business model of personal training, especially in terms of structuring client programs, fostering long-term adherence, and maintaining profitability in an industry often driven by standardized methodologies and metrics? Andrew went on to clarify that by intuitive fitness, he means taking on a holistic approach to health and wellness that emphasizes listening to one's body cues, preferences, and innate instincts to guide exercise, nutrition, and overall well-being. So that was a lot there, Jenny. So Jenny, initially, your thoughts on just the concept of intuitive fitness and intuitive nutrition and how this may work with our personal training clients.
Yeah, so I'm glad that, Andrew, you clarified what intuitive fitness means to you, because it could potentially mean something different to other people. And I kind of was thinking about it differently as well, because I think of intuitive eating, because that's something that I actually studied a lot when I was in college. And it's kind of similar, listening to your body cues, your preferences, right? Your innate instincts. Well, my first question, I have questions, would be, what are they looking for? What is this person supposed to be paying attention to? Because when I hear intuitive, some things that should be intuitive, or we think some people might think might be intuitive, maybe are not intuitive to everyone, right? Like they say common sense is not so common. Well, what's common sense to one person might not be common sense to another person. So I think of the same thing when I think of intuitive. What does that mean for someone? What are they supposed to be listening to? It also, that relates to their goals. What are they trying to accomplish? What might they need to potentially be paying attention to make changes to their lifestyle or their fitness habits or their nutrition habits? We have to help them identify what exactly are you looking for? How do we teach them how to look for these things? Right? How do we teach them how to look for the things that they're supposed to be looking for? And then the big question is this person, this relates back to the psychology and stages of change, is this person in a headspace where they can focus on what they need to focus on? And will they put in effort and time to continually pay attention to, for example, like you mentioned, their body cues, their preferences, their innate instincts? Or are we going to let all the noise, all the things from the outside, the external influences, influence what's going on? Does that make sense? And there's no wrong answer to this because we're all influenced by external things, right? Oh, I know I should go work out, but my alarm didn't go off. I know I should go work out, but my friends just invited me to go to dinner. I know I should be doing this, but this happened, right? We all have those external things. How much effort are we willing to put in where we can say, nope, John, I know you invited me and my husband out to dinner with you and your girlfriend. I can't go. We have some stuff that we need to do, or we're going for a hike. We already declared that we were going to do that, right? So how are we going to give them the tools to help them make, quote, quote, best choice for what they want to do and stick with it? So there's a lot that goes into this, and I love this question. But yeah, those are some of the questions that I would start with. What about you, John?
So my take on being intuitive about your fitness and or your nutrition is that you kind of have to earn it. And here's an example. So with nutrition, there's a difference between hunger and appetite. True hunger is your body's physiological need for nutrients, whereas appetite is you smell something delicious and you want to eat it because it's delicious. You don't need it, but it smells good, looks good, tastes good, so you eat it. That's appetite. So our instincts often drive us toward listening to that appetite signal instead of waiting for true hunger, the true need for nutrients.
John, are you talking about like a concept from that book, Thinking Fast and Slow, that you told me about a while back?
I don't know. I mean, I remember reading that book, but maybe.
Okay, because you've given me some great book recommendations. And this sounds familiar. Go on, carry on.
again, that's what I mean. You have to earn it, meaning your clients don't necessarily know the difference between hunger and appetite. They just know they're receiving some sort of signal to eat something. So they think, okay, well, I must be hungry. But the fact is, a lot of people on a daily basis hardly ever get to the point where they're actually hungry. But their appetite signals them often. It happens to us all. So to be intuitive about your nutrition or your fitness, you have to earn it, in that you have to have been paying attention to what all these signals are. You have to be educated on what some of these different signals are. If your back is hurting, that might tell you something that you need to do with your fitness. But if you don't know what any of that stuff is, then you can't really be terribly intuitive about how you're going to choose to approach your activity, because you just don't know. So then to Andrew's, there was a part of the question where it says, how do we envision integrating these principles of intuitive fitness into the business model of personal training? Well, we can be the guide, right? We can teach. A lot of trainers just take someone through a workout and hardly teach them anything except maybe how to adjust weights or maybe some exercise technique. And that's all good. But if you really want to be the person that can integrate these sorts of techniques or even these philosophies into a person's fitness, then you're going to have to teach them how to be intuitive about things. And I know that's kind of counter to how you would define intuitive, but again, people are getting different signals. We have to teach them what signals to pay attention to and then what to do about it. So as the professional, if you can be the person that could guide someone to a point where they can make good choices for themselves based on what their body is telling them, great. That is a fantastic thing. I would argue that a lot of people misinterpret what their body is telling them and therefore make choices that don't necessarily serve them. I think people like Jenny and myself, who've been doing this for a long time, we can be pretty intuitive about how we eat and how we train, but we've been paying close attention to all this stuff for a long, long time. So that's what I mean by we've earned it. And for a client of yours to earn it, I would say if you can be the teacher that shows them and informs them on the many different things that they're going to encounter on a daily basis and the different signals that their body is going to give them and what those signals can mean, and then some of the things they can do to act on those signals, now we're doing it. Now we're actually teaching them how to take care of themselves. And at the end of the day, as a health and wellness and fitness practitioner, that is the best thing that you can give to your clients, is not just giving them a workout plan and they do 10 of these and 12 of those and 20 of that, you're actually teaching them how to take care of themselves. So now you're truly an educator as opposed to just an exercise coach.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal point, John. And that's a lot of what Andrew was asking here. How do you envision integrating the principles of intuitive fitness into the business model of personal training, especially in terms of structuring client programs, fostering long-term adherence, and maintaining profitability? John, that was a great explanation. You educate them, right? They need to know the why, right? And even telling them in the beginning, I'm big on telling people from the beginning, here's what to expect from me. This is the type of coach that I am. So that when I give them information or I ask them questions or I'm like, here's a teachable moment, jot this down or remember it. There'll be a quiz next time I see you. And I'm not joking, right? They are well aware that, oh, this is what Jenny does. Like, I expect it and let's go, right? And if it doesn't work for them, it doesn't work for them. But most people love it because you're giving them the tools, right? So that you don't need to be with me to be like, oh, John, my back hurts. And John says, okay, it's probably this, this, and this, like we decided. No, they could say, my back hurts. I might not be doing this exercise or this movement properly, or I might need to go warm up a little bit more, whatever it may be. They can figure it out on their own based on what you taught them. You can't tell me that's not going to foster longevity and adherence to a program, because they're going to have some kind of intuitive nature about what's going on because we've showed them what to look for and what does it mean for you, right? And then also maintaining profitability, it's going to get them coming back. If people feel engaged in their program, if they feel like I know what John is having me do and it makes sense to me, right? I'm not that I'm in the dark and I'm just showing up and I'm like, ooh, what are we doing today, John? No, I know what I'm walking into today. Here's where we're at in our program or my plan. And let's go. They're going to keep coming back to you and they're going to refer their friends and they're going to be like, yo, you're going to get the most comprehensive plan. Like, you're going to get all the information that you need. You're going to be successful. And at the end of the day, you guys, when people come to us, whether it's for nutrition, exercise, behavior change, lifestyle change, we're talking about holistic health coaching, essentially. If they get results, if they start to see the things that they weren't seeing on their own because they couldn't do it on their own, that's what they're after. How they get there, for a lot of people, it doesn't matter. That they see it is what matters to them, right? So that's profitability, right? You're going to keep getting people coming back and you're going to get more and more clients looking for the same thing.
I couldn't agree more. And as a business, if you can offer that level of coaching, they're much more likely to stick with you flat out. Mm-hmm. If all you have to offer is showing them how to do some exercises, at some point, I mean, you're going to run out. You're going to start making up exercises, and why would they keep showing up?
They're going to get it online.
Yeah, especially nowadays, right? When there's definitely some great ways to just learn about exercises online. But if you can coach them on how to pay attention to their body and all these signals. Then that's a big thing that will require a lot of education on your part, and you have to kind of earn it yourself. But the best coaches out there, I think, do a lot of these things. And let me tell you that one of the best feelings you can have as a coach is when one of your clients comes in and says, "Hey, my foot was hurting the other day, and then I did that thing that you taught me because I was feeling that pain, and it worked."
Yeah,
that's the client that's going to be sticking with you, because that's like you almost created magic for them. They had this aha moment where they're like, oh, I'm going to do that thing that John kind of was teaching me about. And although that's kind of a technique and exercise technique, what I'm really talking about is they felt something. They experienced a signal and they made a choice that would serve them well. And for me, you know, in terms of being intuitive about how you approach your health and fitness and nutrition, that to me is a great way to coach someone, to get them to the point where they can recognize things and make the choices for themselves.
Absolutely. That happened with one of my youth athletes a couple of weeks ago. Her foot was bothering her. First of all, these kids walk around in Crocs and sandals, John. Those are not shoes. But I showed her how to roll her foot with just a simple tennis ball, which is not the firmest ball in the world. But I showed her how to roll her foot with a tennis ball and she felt immediate relief. And then it was so simple. You know what I did, you guys? I said, do you have a tennis ball at home or a softball or a baseball? And she's like, I don't know. I can go look. And I threw it at her and I chucked it at her. I was like, here, keep this one. That cost me all of 50 cents to give her a tennis ball. And then every time I see her now, John, she comes in and she's like, coach, I rolled my foot and it felt so much better. Or I'm about to go roll my foot before practice. It's those little things. It's those little things. And now she's so excited about it. And I taught her how to do something on her own. So I love that, John.
That's the best.
Yep.
All right, guys, last question of the day. We've got Joe Mucianti from Illinois. So welcome, Joe. You're a big winner today. So Joe's question, as a student of ISSA certification for Master Fitness Trainer, understanding periodization is critical to the success of and can be the key to unlocking hypertrophic gains for the bodybuilder. That's a fancy way of saying growing some muscles. There are clearly different schools of thought behind how to periodize a workout. Knowing that we have to assess the bodybuilder using the concept of individual differences, what scientific experiments have been conducted and what scientific evidence can be shared about how these theories impact the macro and micro aspects? So, for example, recovery time, mass gain, et cetera. What these aspects affect their effect on the body, and thus which ones are most effective and why, outside of the simple method of trial and error, which can take months to discover. So again, this is kind of a deep dive into how do we grow muscles and what things matter when it comes to growing muscles. Jenny, you're the resident expert on growing big muscles. What do you say?
Okay, here we go. You guys ready? Okay, get your big kid pants on. Let's do this. So hypertrophy, you guys, is driven by training volume, right? So I love what you're asking here, but Joe, the end of your question, I'm going to circle back to it where you said outside of the method of simple trial and error, guys, everything is going to be trial and error. Because everything that we know about hypertrophy or about nutrition or about anything, insert anything here, it's general. And individual differences was something you called out in your question. You're absolutely correct. So we cannot say that just because a research study said that you need this many hours of sleep or you need this much protein every day, that that is going to work and be effective for every person. So you're going to have to do some level of trial and error, meaning do your assessments, right? Figure out the person's goals. And then pick some starting points. Here's what we're going to do to start. And we're going to give it this much time to work. Pick your poison, right? Make it appropriate for the person. It's going to be 3 weeks. We're going to wait 3 months. We're going to wait 5 days and then reassess. Is it working or not? And then make adjustments. It is trial and error. So I hate to break it to you. That's got to be part of your plan. If it's not, you're not doing this right because you're not going to get it right the first time. I promise you that. And that's me saying this after 16 years of bodybuilding and I'm still improving, still changing. Right? Because I'm trying new things almost every time I prep for a show. Okay. So this not only relates to a bodybuilder, by the way, this is anybody who wants to build muscle. We're going to leave some research articles specifically. They're mostly through Brad Schoenfeld. If you guys have ever heard that name, he is one of the top researchers in hypertrophy. He is out of New York. He's phenomenal. He has his own social media and stuff. I strongly suggest you follow him. He posts research that his lab and his students are doing all the time. Really great information. But I've done not only 16 years of bodybuilding, but a lot of presentations and research on bodybuilding. So what I'm about to say is rooted in the science. So Joe, you want some science? I got your science. Okay. It's hypertrophy is about volume, training volume. Okay. And the current research is telling us that per movement pattern or muscle group is what we're talking about, right? We're focusing on growing a specific muscle group. For each muscle group, per week, you're looking at 28 to 30 sets of exercise on that muscle group. Okay. Well, now the next question is, well, what does a set look like? Okay. The set is we're looking for 3 to 5 reps of failure, closer to 3. Let's say 3. Okay. Within 3 reps of failure, reps in reserve, we call it. Okay. Now I'm here to tell you, I can safely say that most people have never trained anywhere close to failure. True failure, where you could not do another rep because that's uncomfortable. It's gnarly. Most people get anywhere close to it and they're like, yep, nope. And they stop. Okay. But we're talking about on average 3 reps of failure, meaning you have 3 more reps in the tank before you would have completely failed. So it's got to suck by the end of your set. Now, the next question people are asking, well, what percentage of 1 rep max do I need to use? The good news is it doesn't matter. I think it makes sense for all of us if we understand the training variables. Training at a very high intensity, meaning the higher percentages of your 1 rep max all the time, is very, very hard on your body. It takes a lot of time to recover from, depending on what you're doing, but it's not necessarily ideal to do every single time you train. So the cool thing is, the research is telling us, and again, I'll post the articles that talk about this, you can use any percentage of 1 rep max as long as you are getting in with approximately within 3 reps of failure and completing 28 to 30 sets of exercise on that muscle group. So think about what that means for weight. If you're using a lightweight, air quotes, it feels light. It's an easy weight. Maybe it's 30% of your one rep max. You're probably going to get a whole lot of reps out of it before you get anywhere close to three reps in reserve. If you're using a heavy weight, this is hard. You might only get a few reps before you get to three reps in reserve. Does that make sense? So there's no right or wrong answer as far as the amount of weight, as long as you are working towards three reps in reserve, meaning I got three reps left before I'm dead, not dead, but done. And you're getting 28 to 30 sets of exercise per week is what they're shooting for on that muscle group. That's what drives hypertrophy. And then of course, the nutrition, the sleep, the recovery, the hydration, all of that matters too. You cannot neglect that, right? Just like people who say, oh, I want to eat more protein to build muscle. Well, your training, your sleep, your hydration, all these other things need to be in order as well. Your recovery, right? So if you're looking for the variables as far as training, there they are. Okay. And again, we'll post the research for you guys, mostly led by Brad Schoenfeld, is some of the stuff that I was focused in on. Really good research that talks a lot about this.
What an answer.
No, I love this question because I've done so much of a deep dive into this research because it applies to me. Like, this is what I do. And I mean, I could maybe share some before and after pictures of my competing days, John, 16 years ago. And then my last show a year ago. So 15 years in, I look ver different.
Yeah. And that's because you've been doing things right. And by right, I mean, that's information that's changing over time. When I first started in the industry, if you want to build muscle, basically what we heard is you got to go hard and heavy. You got to go hard and heavy. That's how I kind of learned it.
And you got to eat protein within 30 minutes of your workout.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All of that stuff.
Don't forget about that one.
Yeah. Although the protein will definitely not be amino acids in your bloodstream within that 30 minutes. So anyways, that's for another day. But, you know, over time, we start to realize that it has more to do with volume. And that's like the dominant factor in as to whether or not you're going to see success. And there's so much good news to get from that. Working out hard and heavy all the time leads you to joints that don't work anymore. If you're familiar with Ronnie Coleman, he's not moving so well anymore. And he was like one of those bodybuilders that was known for lifting the heaviest weights. In my own case, I'm 48 now. So I know I've put on more muscle in my 40s than I did in my 30s. And, you know, part of it was because I intentionally wanted to do that. I wanted to put on some muscle, but at no point was I doing anything that was particularly heavy during my training. But was it high volume? Absolutely. Doing like German volume training, style of training where it's 10 sets of 10. When you're doing 10 sets of 10 with minimal rest, trust me, it's not heavy. It can't be if you're going to do those 10 sets of 10. And then, yes, and now I was getting my sleep and eating right and all of that other stuff. But I say all that to say that understanding this will allow, you know, people like myself, not just bodybuilders like Jenny, but people like myself who want to put on some muscle, to do it in a way that is effective, but also still helps me to be functional and take care of my body. Because if you're lifting heavy all the time, that is very hard on the body. It's very hard on your joints. And when you start hurting your joints, that's a difficult thing to come back from. Joints don't recover in the same way that your muscles do. And when you start to have injuries there, it does certainly start to become a problem. So again, focusing on volume means you have to track it. Because if you're not tracking it, then who knows what's happening. For your clients, this is going to be especially true. You need to track that volume so that you make sure that you're making the appropriate changes to their training if they want to continue to see muscular growth. So again, really good question. Thank you, Jenny, for that answer. And hopefully this, you know, inspires you to check out some of that research. And we will be posting it in the show notes. So you can check that out. But hopefully, again, it just inspires you to kind of check out all the different things that are out there and a lot of the great information that's out there that allows us to be better fitness professionals. Because again, if I was doing the same things that I was doing 25 years ago, then I would, it's not a big jump to say that I'd be doing it wrong. There's so much that we've learned over the last 25 years that allows me to be a better, more educated trainer now in comparison to back then.
Yeah, for sure. So Joe, yeah, definitely check out the research, guys. There's tons of research. And keep in mind, one little note about research, especially as it relates to fitness. First of all, you can find research that supports pretty much any opinion. I'll say it again. You can find research that supports any opinion. So when you're looking at research, you guys, no matter what you're finding, look at things like, you can't just look at the abstract and like the results. You have to look at the actual procedures. What was the population that they did this study on? Was it 20-year-old boys? Was it 45-year-old women? Was it like, what was the population that they worked on, right? Because that matters. There's specificity to that. Also, how large was the sample size? Maybe it was a research project where they only had 5 people in the lab. That means a lot. That means different things than if you had 400 people or 5,000 people do a study or collect data from. Does that make sense? So take everything with a grain of salt. Look at the actual procedures and the information about the population that they studied. Maybe look at the mechanisms or how they studied things, the procedures that they used when they were doing the research, things like that. So better understand that kind of stuff. The more you look at research, by the way, the more you're going to be able to understand it, the easier it'll be to read these papers because they can get kind of nerdy. The abstract is a great place to start, but you have to look at the details as well. And a good researcher, someone like Brad, will point out, hey, here's some limitations to this study, or hey, we're going to do this again and see if we can replicate it. And that's the key behind scientific research. You have to be able to replicate it. You can't just do it once and be like, this is fact, right? You have to be able to replicate it over and over again and potentially in different scenarios or situations.
Wow. So think about it, guys. We've talked about fitness routines for golfers. We've talked about intuitive fitness. We've talked about training significant other, talked about how to maintain fitness while traveling. And we've talked about some of the latest and greatest research in terms of hypertrophy. So this is, to me, fascinating look into what is relevant to our listeners. And again, hopefully this is information that you can take away and do something with it. That's the point of listening to this podcast. And that's our hope, is that you can take this information. And if in the very least it makes you think about things a little bit differently, great. But hopefully it gives you some things that you can take action on with yourself or your clients. So again, thank you guys. And thank you to the people that we picked as our winners for this podcast. Again, Kerry Reynolds, Jackie Halbert-Waskell, Madison Mazio, Andrew Saxon, and Joe Muccianti will be in contact with you soon.
Absolutely. Awesome questions, you guys. Looking forward to doing this again. So again, keep your eye out on our social media. We'll throw out a link when we're ready to accept some more questions, you guys. But go out there, do all the things, take all this information and use it, and let us know how you are using it. We love to hear back from you guys. But above all, make good choices. We'll be talking to you soon.